And welcome to Capitalink's webinar series to discuss Greece and the European sovereign debt crisis. This topic has been in the center of investor attention for some time now. Given the significance of the topic for the global markets, we believe that it is vital to have a regular communication addressed directly to the global investment community, and today's webinar aims exactly to enhance this information flow and improve investor education on the topic. We intend to hold a series of webinars on this topic and present the global investment community with the progress achieved over time. The first webinar is today with Mrs. Jada Janney, Director and Senior European Economist for Citigroup Global Markets in London. She covers the Mediterranean countries, Italy, Spain, Greece and Portugal, within Citi's Economic and Market Analysis Department in London. She will provide us not only with the challenges, progress and outlook of the initiatives undertaken in Greece, but she will also describe the wider European scene and address the role of the euro in today's markets. Next Wednesday, July 28, 2010, and 10 o'clock in the morning, Eastern Daylight Time, we will hold another webinar with Professor Yannis Tournaras, Director General of the Foundation of Economic and Industrial Research, IOVE. He's also Professor of Economics at the University of Athens and a former Governor of the Commercial Bank of Greece. Professor Tournaras will provide next week a detailed review of the initiatives undertaken and implemented in Greece so far and the outlook of the Greek economy in light of these reforms. We plan to hold another webinar on the topic at around the middle of September. Also, tomorrow, Thursday, July 22, 2010, at 9:30 a.m. New York time, we will be holding another webinar on the prospects and outlook of the dry bulk shipping sector with executives from Excel Maritime Carriers, Paragon Shipping, Star Bulk Carriers, and TBS International. You can access it at no cost, as usual, at www.capitallinkwebinars.com. Before turning the floor over to Jada to commence the presentation, I would like to mention that the Greek government has indeed put in place a series of sweeping reforms, and so far these have produced tangible results. Yesterday's official announcement by the Greek Ministry of Finance that the deficit in the first half of 2010 relative to the same period of 2009 was reduced by 45.4% is indicative of this trend. Today's webinar is being recorded for our audio archive and is available through the Capitalink webinar website at www.capitalinkwebinars.com. Today's presentation will be followed by a question and answer session. Participants can submit questions through the special button on the event page entitled Submit a Question, or they can email them to us at questions@capitallinkwebinars.com. You can submit a question anytime during the event. The questions will come to me, and I will then address them to Jada. Also, please note that the presentation slides are user-controlled. That means that each participant can click on the proper button on his or her computer screen to move to the previous or to the next slide. Before starting with today's discussion, I would like to reiterate that the purpose of this event is to foster a better understanding of Greece and the European sovereign debt crisis among investors. The presentation and opinions expressed by the presenter are not intended as legal or investment advice or advice of any kind, as a matter of fact, and are provided only for informational and educational purposes, and Capitalink bears no responsibility for them. Now I will turn the floor over to Jada Janney, our presenter, and I would like to thank her very much for being with us today and for sharing her wealth and of knowledge on the topic. I cannot resist the temptation to share with you the fact that right now we have over 450 people online and we see a lot more coming in to register, so we're off to a great start. Now I will invite Jada to start. Jada, please, the floor is yours.
Hi, good afternoon, everyone. Good morning, everyone. Today what I'm going to talk to you through is very briefly what are our thoughts in terms of the European sovereign debt crisis, why we think he has emerged, particularly in Europe, and specifically in Greece, as a start in Europe, but then spreading out to other peripheral Eurozone countries. We also go through what we think are the most recent developments out from Greece after the establishment of and the launching of the IMF and EU adjustment program, and what we think are the most likely what is the most likely scenario coming through over the next few quarters for Greece, and also we finish out with some more wider implications in terms of what the euro sovereign debt crisis means and has meant and will continue to mean for the rest of the euro area, and the way the euro area framework has been working up to now since the creation of the euro in 1999, and what the sovereign debt crisis may imply in terms of the single currency, the euro, and its role as a sort of international currency, reserve currency. So if we start off with by looking at a few very simple data, I'm moving on to slide number 3 now, with looking at very simple data on fiscal variables, on public deficits and public debt as a percentage of GDP. And these simple charts, I think they do already provide quite an important picture of why, or an important reason why the crisis has indeed erupted in Europe, and specifically in Greece. On the left-hand side chart, we plot the fiscal deficit and the public debt as a percentage of GDP in 2009 for all the euro area countries, with the lines representing the euro area averages. And according to this chart, it is clearly evident why Greece has been singled out as the sort of most fiscally weak country among the Eurozone countries as of the end of last year. If we compare, however, this chart for the euro area with other main macroeconomic areas, regions in the world, and we add to that chart also the UK, US, and Japan, as we did in the right-hand chart, the right-hand side chart, is not that clear why in the sovereign debt crisis has indeed erupted that badly in the euro area itself, and not has not affected, at least so far, any of the other regions like the UK, US, or Japan, which, according to that chart, based on these two simple fiscal measures, they probably are looking in a worse situation compared to the aggregate euro area. The main reason I think for this not to have, for the crisis not to have spread to the UK, US, or Japan can be found in the second, in the following slide, page number 4, where we do plot the fiscal variable, the main fiscal variable, which is the fiscal balance, the public deficit, basically, as a percentage of GDP, but we compare it with the current account deficit. Now, the current account deficit is a measure, in a nutshell, is a measure of how much an overall country as a whole is saving or dis-saving relative to the rest of the world. And now we see how and why the sort of fiscally weak Eurozone countries, and not just Greece, but also Portugal, Spain, and Ireland, exactly those countries that have been highlighted and have been under the radar screens over the last few months by the investment community, why these countries do compare badly compared to the other Eurozone countries, but not only those, but also compare badly with the US and the UK. The main problem are twofold for these peripheral Eurozone countries. It's not just that they have a large fiscal deficit, but they also have huge current account deficits. So if you look at the current account deficit of Greece, yeah, this is bad, but if you compare the Portuguese and the Spanish one, these are numbers for 2009, which were already a little bit better than the current account numbers at the peak of the cycle at the end of 2007. So these countries not only had a significant imbalance in their public sector balance sheet, but they also had significant imbalances in the private sector balance sheet. And this is reflected in the fact that they had to borrow a significant amount of resources every year in order to finance their domestic growth. And I think this is in a nutshell why the Eurozone countries have been singled out among all the other high deficit countries around the world. They have been singled out as the weakest one. I think the other point is, which is partly a reflection of this lack of domestic savings, is the fact that these Eurozone countries, these peripheral Eurozone countries, including Greece, have been building up a significant amount of debt over the last decade. That has been fueled by particularly low real interest rates because of the convergence within the euro towards low nominal interest rates and because of higher than average inflation, realized inflation. So real interest rates in these countries were particularly low. And that has fueled a significant build-up of domestic debt. Now, domestic debt has entered already in some countries, not much in others, but in many countries like Spain and Ireland, has entered already the deleveraging phase. The recession and the financial crisis has definitely kicked off the process of deleveraging of the private sector. But the deleveraging, as we know from many empirical evidences in the past, deleveraging processes do take a lot of time. And the main reflection of their playing out in the economy is that they depress potential growth. The very reason the main reason why this is there is because obviously you need to save the private sector needs to save more in order to pay down its debt, and that means that they have less resources to spend. And so I think the other point was the other main point why these peripheral Eurozone countries have been singled out is that because they had the projections for their potential GDP growth was significantly revised downwards compared to what we were used to see before the recession. And one final point with that, which I think is sometimes overlooked, but I think was quite important, at least in as a trigger event for the Greek crisis, was the role of the ECB in the overall sovereign debt crisis. I think that if we look at page 6, on slide 6, and we look at these charts which basically show the change in liquidity obtained from the central bank by all the banks in the euro area and the change in their holdings of government bonds. And basically what the chart is showing is that the amount of liquidity that has been injected into the system by the central bank since the beginning of the crisis and specifically since a year ago in July 2009 has been used to a large extent to finance the net borrowing of the government. And so to buying up and increase the bank's holding of government bonds. And what that has ended up is that at the end of last year, Greek banks, together with Irish banks and then Portuguese bank, were the most reliant on ECB's funding as the largest takers of in terms of their total assets as the largest takers of liquidity from the central banks, and that means that that created quite a lot of vulnerability for these banks because I think it's not a matter of coincidence if the Greek crisis has started at the very time when the central bank was, the ECB was starting to announce, at least, to withdraw part of the liquidity and the non-conventional measures that they had been put in place. So the fear that the withdrawal of liquidity from the system would have subtracted a significant and important source of funding for the central government was one of the main fears of market participants around the beginning of the Greek crisis. So now, you know, these are the three sort of key points which I wanted to make and which I think are important to bear in mind in terms of why we think that the sovereign debt crisis has started and has developed so dramatically in Europe rather than in other areas. As we move on quickly to Greece, I think probably Greece did have within the Eurozone, Greece probably has also a key role in attracting the market participants' attention. And I think if we move on to slide 7, this is the first factor, which is Greece is highly dependent on foreign funding of their public debt. The share of public debt held abroad in the middle of 2009 was the highest among all the Eurozone countries. And the other factor is, on the next slide, slide 8, the other factor is the particular weakness of the Greek public budget. The slide does show the tax revenues as a percentage of GDP in the rest of the Eurozone, in the rest of the EU 15 and in Greece, and it does show the lack or the extensive problems in collecting tax revenue, in collecting tax revenues relative to the overall GDP. So I think there were specific issues related to Greece which sort of justified why markets did focus on Greece rather than other Eurozone peripheral countries, even though, as we said before, they did share some structural features. I also think that Greece, on the other hand, it looks a little bit better on other metrics compared to the other peripheral countries. And one metric is that the total debt. I mean, I think the main problem for Greece has been and is and will continue to be the public debt, the high level of public debt. But if you take the overall debt of public plus private, plus private, so households and non-financial corporation, Greece does not compare that badly compared to the other peripheral Eurozone countries. Actually, for countries like Ireland, Portugal and Spain, the main problem is not really the public debt, it's more the private debt. And if you like, I do see this feature as a kind of a positive or less negative, if you like, feature for Greece compared to the other Eurozone countries, because it's much easier, I believe, to tackle the public debt because you only have one borrower, whereas if you need to tackle the deleveraging of the private economy, it's more complicated. It becomes more complicated because you need to be able to manage the deleveraging of the overall private sector and to be able to transfer some of the liabilities from the private sector onto the public sector and then bail out the public sector. So in a way, the fact that the overall debt in Greece is smaller compared to Ireland and Portugal and Spain does put Greece in a slightly better position compared to these countries. Now, if we move on to slide 12, just for the sake of time. So what's next for Greece? How Greece is going to tackle or has been tackling the crisis and what will happen to Greece in the next few quarters? The kind of fiscal tightening that has been put on the plate by Greece for this year and next year is huge. Is kind of unprecedented in terms of the total size. We're talking about 15 percentage points of GDP over the next 4 or 5 years. This is IMF estimates in terms of the total fiscal tightening. And if we just take the 2010 and 2011 figures, which are shown in slide 12, you could see how Greece compares with the other European countries, and you can see how much larger is the fiscal tightening for this year and the next in Greece compared to the other Eurozone countries. If you move on to the slide 13, there is a list of measures that the government has agreed and has already almost entirely put in place since the beginning of the year in order to reduce the deficit. The total tightening for this year is about 7.5 percentage points of GDP, out of which 5% were measures that were implemented by the government before the setup of the IMF EU financial assistance program. And the 2.5% is the kind of measure that the set of measures which were agreed within the memorandum of understanding with the IMF and the EU program. This, as I said, these kind of measures are quite substantial. Obviously, people are once the fiscal tightening measures have sort of been put in place, and the political risk of having these measures approved has sort of been overcome a little bit, then people were starting to question about the impact, or the negative impact of these huge fiscal tightening on economic growth. And people were starting to question about the possibility of a negative spiral between the fiscal tighter fiscal policy and GDP growth collapsing. And people were starting to see risks of this negative spiral setting up and not being able to generate any significant improvement in the fiscal deficit, because the more you tighten fiscal policy, the more nominal GDP is falling, and the more tax revenues are not really picking up because of falling in GDP. I think this is a genuine and accurate concern. I also think that there is another issue which has sometimes has been sort of overlooked, and it's the fact that why the government bond spreads and tighter financing condition do lead, and they have already led to a significant tightening in financing conditions for the private sector. If we look at the bank lending rates at slide number 14, the bank lending rates for the private sector in Greece versus the rest of the euro area, you can see how the divergence has been opening up between the two over the last 6 months. And I think this is a result of the sovereign debt crisis in general, and is a result of the fact that the banking system has been put under a lot of pressure by the problems within the sovereign and by the fact that higher sovereign bond yields obviously do translate eventually into higher cost of financing for the private sector. So I think there will continue to be two negative drags on economic growth in Greece, one which is coming from the fiscal tightening, and the other one which will continue to come from tighter financing conditions for the private sector. Having said that, if we move on to the slide 15, I think market participants have sort of taken this picture with probably a little bit too much pessimism. Recent data on GDP growth, real GDP growth, on inflation, and on the fiscal variables, as we were saying before, have actually shown that the most negative scenarios that people were fearing just a few weeks ago, probably 2 months ago, are not really materializing. And actually, yes, GDP growth is decelerating, obviously, the fiscal tightening, as we said, 7.5 percentage point is huge. Monetary tightening is significant already. So the GDP is decelerating, but it's probably not collapsing as much as many people were fearing just a few months ago. If we take the recent survey indicators, the economic sentiment indicator, for example, as this is the one that I've put in this slide, it does suggest that GDP growth may be running at around minus three and a half percent, year on year terms. And this is, obviously this is bad. This is a significant shift compared to what Greece has been used to in the pre-crisis period. But it's probably, as I said, it's probably not as bad as many people were fearing just a few weeks ago. And the other point is, if we move on to slide number 17, the other point is the fiscal deficit, the fiscal variables. Recent data have shown a significant improvement in the fiscal deficit in 2010 relative to 2009. We said before, we've seen yesterday the Finance Ministry data which showed a 45% increase in, decline, in the deficit relative to last year. This is already a quite significant decline. Most of the improvement came from expenditure cuts. Tax revenues are picking up, but obviously with the declining in economic activity, they're not as yet picking up in a very significant way. But obviously most of the adjustment should come from the expenditure cuts, because this is where the largest overruns were recorded in the previous year. So it does make sense that the largest size of the reduction in the deficit comes from lower expenditure. So as far as I can see from the recent data, the recent data, what they're telling us is that first of all, the government has been able to implement a quite significant fiscal tightening already, and this is something that people were questioning again just a couple of months ago. We're still questioning whether the government would have been able to implement any kind of fiscal tightening. So the fiscal tightening has been implemented, and also fiscal tightening has started to bear some fruit. So it's not true, at least for the time being. Data seems to suggest that it's not true that the more you tighten fiscal policy, the worse your growth outlook is getting, and the resulting in a not really improving fiscal deficit. The fiscal deficit is definitely improving. Having said that, obviously, the road ahead is still quite uphill. I mean, the amount of fiscal tightening that has been put in place and then it's been planned for the next few years is still quite substantial. So obviously economic and political fatigue could still kick in and slow down the pace of improvement in the fiscal deficit. But I think the recent data should be given some grant in the sense that they should send some positive signs among the general pessimism that has been going around on Greece over the last few months. And I think if we look at the next slide, at page 18, and if we look at how the debt to GDP ratio, the debt to GDP ratio is going to play out, based on the assumption that the current fiscal tightening that has been planned so far, so not just for 2010 but also for the next few years, will be implemented. So in the like of in our sort of best case scenario, this is the way the debt to GDP ratio is going to behave. And as we see, it does succeed. The current fiscal tightening, it does succeed in stabilizing the debt to GDP ratio. Obviously, it will remain one of the highest ratios within the Eurozone for a few years to come. But what matters most, I think, for financial markets at present is really the trajectory of the debt. And the trajectory means the sustainability in the medium term of the debt. Now, as I said, there are lots of implementation risks still around the planned fiscal tightening for Greece. The preliminary data that we've seen do suggest that the possibility of stabilizing the debt-to-GDP ratio is actually there. And I think also compared to the other peripheral Eurozone countries, which have, yes, put in place some fiscal tightening measures already, like Spain and Portugal, definitely Ireland, but based on the current plans, these are not enough to stabilize that GDP ratio. So obviously Greece has a lot more to do because they have a very ambitious plan, but if the plan is going ahead, then that would be enough in order to stabilize the debt ratio. If we move on quickly again to the final part of the presentation, and I wanted to touch a little bit on what that means, or what the sovereign debt crisis means for the overall euro area. I think one thing is clear from the financial crisis and from the sovereign debt crisis is that the pre-crisis sovereign government bond spreads within the eurozone are probably unlikely to be seen again in any point in the future. I think the very compressed level of the spreads within the eurozone now look as the anomaly rather than the normality. So I think we will continue to have a significant divergence between the government bond yields within the eurozone. As the charts on page 20, on slide 20 are showing, especially the chart on the right-hand side, it shows the divergence, the cross-country variation in government bond yields. So it's the standard deviation divided by the mean, so standardized, across all the EMU. Before the euro introduction in 1999 and afterwards. And as you can see, now we've gone back, as a result of the sovereign debt crisis, we've gone back to levels seen before 1999, of the mid-90s, actually. And I think, you know, while I do not think that we are going to stay the government bonds spreads are not going to stay as wide as they are now, I think they will, on a structural basis, they will stabilize to levels that are much wider, and much more spread out compared to what we were used to have or to see in the period between 1999 and 2008. And what that means, I think, as we were saying before, and we move on to the following slides at page 21, is that this is likely to be reflected also in more widespread financing conditions across the countries. As we've seen in Greece, bank lending rates to non-financial corporations have already started to go up, while at the euro area level, these interest rates have been still going down. The dispersion, so the cross-country variation of bank lending rates has widened both for corporates and for households over the last 2 years. And I think it will stabilize to this more widespread level compared to what we were used to before. And I think one factor to add to it is that not only that nominal interest rates will be higher in the peripheral countries, in the countries that will have to go through a deleverage of the public and the private sector, but also inflation will be lower, definitely lower than what it used to be before the recession. So we're used to have inflation in Greece, Portugal, Ireland, and and Spain, 1.5 percentage point higher than the rest of Europe, the rest of your euro area. And now these countries, aside from Greece, because of indirect tax hikes, but in general, in underlying term, in these countries, inflation is like to all undershoot the rest of the eurozone. And what that means in terms of real rates, that we're going to have a significantly higher level of real interest rates for the eurozone periphery. The eurozone periphery has benefited from a significantly low real interest rate environment for 10 years. I think that time is gone. They will probably settle after the sovereign crisis has passed and the market turbulence is abated. I think that equilibrium will probably settle to a much higher level of real interest rates, which obviously will depress their potential growth rate going forward in the future. So fiscal policy will be tighter, but also, as we were saying before, for Greece, that applies for all the other peripheral countries, monetary financial conditions will also be tighter. Definitely tighter than what they were used to, but possibly also tighter than the rest of the eurozone. And so that means, if we move on to slide number 24, what that means is that the deleveraging means higher private savings and lower spending. So potential GDP growth for Greece, but also for Ireland and Spain, I think will be significantly affected by the sovereign crisis, by the fact that we'll have a tighter financial condition, tighter financial conditions across these countries relative to what they were used to in the past decade. And that means that this will help the rebalancing of their economy. So in this chart, page 24, we show a proxy of private savings, which is the current account balance less the government budget balance. And as you can see, a large swing has already happened in Ireland and Spain, to a less extent in Greece, but possibly will continue in the coming years. So lower growth, I think, is and higher real interest rates will probably be the adjustment mechanism for the deleveraging of the public and the private sectors in these peripheral eurozone countries. I think I would stop here for the sake of time, but I would be very happy to take on any questions that you have.
Jada, thank you very much. It has been a very, very interesting presentation, and thank you for sharing your insight on a topic that you know so well. We will take some questions, as you mentioned, and I would kindly remind our audience, by the way, again, I cannot resist telling you that we have now more than 550 people online, so this has been a hugely successful event, and thank you to all. Anyone who would like to submit a question, please, you can click on the button on your screen, says ask a question, and it will come to me. Or you can email us at questions@capitallinkwebinars.com. I would kindly request that you submit your questions in English. I think it's all the diversity of our audience. I have gotten a number of questions in Spanish, and I apologize. I will try to translate them. So please submit any questions you would like, and in English, please. So, Jada, I have a number of questions. I will try to group them. Some of the questions that we have relate to Greece itself, and some of them relate to the wider European scene. I will start with the questions on Greece. And as you mentioned, it is important to acknowledge the fact that still a lot remains to be done, but I think the Greek government seems to be off to a good start, as you mentioned, and hopefully that can help alleviate the pessimism that has been going around in the markets for so long. The question that I have, and it comes from Rachel Del Zotto from Riverside Asset Management, do you believe that the reforms that have been put in place right now by the Greek government are sufficient to turn things around? And A second question related to that is, you addressed it in your presentation, but it's worth focusing on it. These austerity measures, will they lead the economy into depression, or can we expect some growth to come in the GDP, and where will that growth come from? Please
go
ahead.
Well, whether the reforms are sufficient, well, as I said in the presentation, if you take the actual numbers in terms of the planned fiscal consolidation, and you translate them in order to see whether they are able to stabilize the debt to GDP ratio, then yes, they are sufficient. But as I said, there are lots of implementation risks because obviously we are all working on estimates. We're all working on the estimates about the effect of a particular measure, a particular tightening measure, and its effect on fiscal revenues and expenditures of the public sector. And these are estimates, and so that means that they are subject to quite a lot of risk in terms of what they will be able to bring through. The recent data have been saying that the current kind of measures, they may actually be able to reduce the deficit more than what the government is currently targeting for this year. So the deficit for this year may end up being less than 8%, which is the current target for the government. But 8% is still high. It's a still high deficit. And it will take two to three more years in order to reduce the deficit back to some kind of level which makes the debt sustainable. And my fear, and I think my main concern, is not the short term, but it's more the medium term. It's more the fact that after 1-2 years of fiscal pain, the economy may be too tired, if you like, of fiscal consolidating measures, and that may lead to a less positive development in 18 months, 24 months down the line. Second question, will the austerity measure lead the economy into depression? Well, as I said, current data are actually suggesting that there is definitely a negative impact on growth. We've seen the Greek economy re-decelerating again, whereas the rest of the Eurozone is mildly coming out of recession. So there is a divergence which we can see between Greece and the Eurozone, which I think is due to the fiscal tightening. But obviously there is we need to distinguish between a deep depression and a contraction in economic activity which is to some extent acceptable. And I think, you know, for the time being, data are suggesting that the amount of the recession, the deepness of the recession, the depth of the recession so far is somewhat manageable.
Thank you. Actually, a related question that just came in, it says, how can Greece and the other so-called peripheral economies restart economic and employment growth when they conduct fiscal tightening and are subject to higher net interest rates?
Yeah. Well, I think the key issue here is how Greece and the other peripheral countries are able to regain competitiveness and so exploit the rebound in global trade, in global growth, in order to benefit and improve and take advantage of it and base their GDP growth on net export growth. Now, this is something that is obviously not happening and not possible to happen in the short term. Competitiveness gains are something that needs years to be taken. So I think it will be a long process, but I think the only way out I do see for these countries is by regaining competitiveness and being able to strengthen their exporting sectors and exploit their comparative advantages in order to be able to export their way out of the recession-induced or the low GDP growth induced by the fiscal tightening. There's no way they can continue to rely on domestic demand. The only way they can sort themselves out is to try to redirect resources away from the domestic sectors towards export-oriented sectors.
Thank you. Actually, if I can reinforce, Jada, what you said, going back to the situation of Greece, I think one of the things that the government is trying to do is cut down on the red tape. And to give an example, all of us, for example, who live in the United States, we can establish a new company within a day. In Greece, it took 37 different steps to establish, I think, a corporation. Now the government has passed a reform. It takes one or two steps. So they're really trying to cut down on the red tape, and I think that will hopefully reflect into improved competitiveness, and I think they're also trying to inject liquidity into smaller companies, medium-sized companies. So you're absolutely right that I think improvement in competitiveness can help. Another question that, and I think that's, you know, the billion-dollar question, it's on everybody's mind. It comes from John Anagnos, he's the vice president at Morgan Stanley, and he's asking, a lot of people have voiced the concern about, you know, the restructuring for the Greek debt. Is that something that you think is in the cards, especially given what is happening right now with the improvement in their macro figures?
Well, I think first of all, the decision of restructuring for a sovereign is always, at the end of the day, a political decision. If you think a government can always, almost always, I would say, find a way to pay his, down his debt if he wants to. It can increase taxes from one day to the other. It can, you know, draw the liquidity from the private sector, you know, almost to an unlimited extent. But the problem is, would the decision of defaulting on the sovereign debt be driven by political considerations at some point? And in that respect, I think for the time being, at least, for the next, I would say, 12 to 18 months, as long as the IMF and EU adjustment program remains on track, as long as the government is able to deliver to meet these conditions set by the IMF and the EU, I think the default probability is fairly low. It's fairly low because obviously the Greek government needs to rely on the external financing. The external financing is there. It's not cheap, but it's there, and it's secured as long as they deliver on the conditions and they meet the conditions. What I think, and what I think also market participants are starting to sort of redirect their attention to, is what happens when the adjustment program ends in 2.5 years. At that point, as I showed before during the presentation, the debt-to-GDP ratio in Greece will still be close to 140%, so it will be a significant burden on the public sector. Lots of resources will be transferred abroad in interest payments every year on the back of this high level of debt. And so it will possibly, at that stage, become more convenient, politically and economically convenient for the government to work out some kind of restructuring on or haircut, maybe small, but on the public debt in order to reduce the interest burden. But obviously, you know, we're talking something around, you know, two or three years down the line. I think for the next 2 or 3 years, the probability of default in Greece is fairly small.
I would tend to agree with you. I think, I mean, the Greek government strenuously denies any likelihood of restructuring. And as you mentioned in your presentation before, I think, you know, we should give them the benefit of the doubt, given the fact that they are serious about implementing a number of reforms, and these reforms are showing results. At the same time, and that leads me into the next question, right now there has been put in place an unprecedented system of support from the IMF, the European Union, the European Central Bank, and part of it is to ensure liquidity for the Greek government and also for other European governments, exactly to avoid being pushed against the wall in terms of refinancing and liquidity. Can you explain to us, that's one of the questions that came in, and that's from John Harris from Harris Securities. Can you describe to us how does that support system work, how it can benefit Greece, how it can benefit the investors who are refinancing the Greek debt right now, and how it can also benefit the other European countries if they ever need to draw on that system?
Yeah. Well, the European Financial Stabilization Facility is definitely the biggest step, I would say, together with the decision of the ECB of purchasing government bonds, as a response of European policymakers to create a safety net for the weakest links, if you like, in the Eurozone. Greece is marginally affected by it because obviously Greece had beforehand, before the creation of the European Financial Stabilization Facility, has agreed on its own safety net from the IMF and the Eurozone. So it's a sort of a special case, if you like, in that general framework. But having said that, I think you know, the key issue to highlight here is that the recent political steps that European policymakers have taken have clearly shown that there is a clear political will to maintain the stability of the Eurozone, or the financial stability of the Eurozone. I think policymakers have realized that the current situation is, the current pre-crisis situation is not anymore an equilibrium, that they probably need more fiscal integration and coordination in order to have just one monetary authority and one single currency, and the usual mismatch between having 16 or plus different fiscal authorities and one single monetary authority has been clearly demonstrated. The mismatch has been clearly demonstrated by the financial crisis. And so I think the policymakers' responses with the creation of the EFSF and with the ECB buying government bonds, I think has been clear in the sense that they show a political will in order to go a step farther and to keep the Eurozone together. And I think this is the most important message, which I think needs to be drawn by these policy steps, rather than the policy steps itself, because I think these are, you know, these, as I was saying, these are designed to be safety nets rather than mechanisms to solve the crisis. You know, the only way to solve the crisis is by governments trying to put their public finances and their own countries on a more sustainable path. This is the only way to solve the crisis. But the European policymakers have sort of put these safety nets in place in order to buy time for the government and for them to be able to implement these kind of structural reforms. Obviously, now the pressure and the attention is all on the government, is all on the national government and their ability to deliver in terms of fiscal tightening and in terms of structural reforms.
Well, I have a question that came in from Mr. Arapoglou. He is a senior equity analyst with Piraeus Securities in Greece, and he's asking, on slide 18, you show that you know, the Greek debt peaks at around 2014, but then, according to the chart, it starts falling and being more in line with the rest of the Eurozone countries. So why are you concerned for the longer term, given that the trend past 2014 seems to be converging rather than diverging in terms of
because these, as I was saying, these numbers are estimates which with huge standard errors around them. And I do see, as I was saying, lots of implementation risks. So I do see the risks that the peak point is not 140, but could be 150, maybe, because it takes more time to reduce the deficit, and so the debt will reach a higher point. And also, I do see risks that the trend after the peak is not a downward trend, but maybe a sideways move. And so, my point is that the planned fiscal tightening, as far as it has been written so far, is huge. And if successful, if implemented, it is successful in bringing down the debt to GDP ratio. My question mark remains on the implementation phase.
Thank you. And it was a similar question that came in from Robert McKenzie from FBR Capital Markets, who was asking exactly the same thing, but not for Greece, for the wider Eurozone, because we see the trajectory of all government debts rising temporarily, and you answered that already. I will ask you, if I understand correctly, Jenna, your point is that we have better visibility for the near term, and maybe that's the one that we should be focusing on, tracking what the government is doing, what results they're achieved, as opposed to worrying what will happen 2 or 3 years down the road.
Yes.
And maybe I think the investment community can focus exactly on what is being done right now, what are the trends, the results, and we go from there. Now, I will just give it a couple more minutes. I don't want to surpass the hour. One of the questions that came in, is the European Rating Agency likely? There has been a lot of discussion about it. Is that something that you think would be a good idea? I don't want to put you on the spot, but...
It is likely to happen, I think. I think European policymakers are moving also in that direction. I'm not really sure whether it's going to change in any meaningful way the things. Actually, you know, it could be that a European rating agency could be more influenced, politically influenced, than the current system of rating agencies. So I don't think there is an optimal solution to the rating agency problem.
And the last question I want to ask you is, is there in Europe right now sort of a system being put in place that can prevent you know, a similar crisis from happening, or that can have early warning signs about it? And at the same time, is there a mechanism in place that can monitor, you know, once you spot a problem, that can, you can monitor its correction?
Yeah, well, as I was saying before, I think that the level of attention, the awareness on government issues, on government budget issues, will continue to remain pretty high in the next few years, on the back of what has happened to Greece, but also to the other peripheral Eurozone countries. I think, you know, the one thing has clearly been shown by the crisis is that the Stability and Growth Pact, that was meant to be the surveillance mechanism in the Eurozone, has failed to work. And so policymakers are trying to figure out what is an alternative and more powerful instrument in order to monitor the imbalances, the growing imbalances within government budgets. So I do believe, yes, that there will continue to be more attention on government budget issues. There will probably be a closer scrutiny by European institutions on these issues, and so it will probably be easier, or marginally easier, at least in the future, to spot whether there is any problem upcoming.
Jada, I would like to thank you very much. I think we have taken now a bit more than an hour, and I don't want to tire neither you nor our audience. So I wanted to thank you very much for being with us today and for giving us this, frankly, extremely enlightening presentation. I think that doing events like that, that you know, we enhance the information flow to the whole investment community. I think that's very important. And clearly, you know your topic extremely well, so I would like to thank you again for being with us. I would like to thank the more than 550 participants who made this event again a great success. And in concluding, I would like to say that next week, Professor Yannis Tournaras will give us the Greek perspective. He's going to go into what is happening in Greece right now in more detail, whereas today's event gave us both the Greek and the more general European overview. So we look forward to having everybody again with us next Wednesday. And don't forget that tomorrow we have another webinar on the dry bulk sector. Jada, thank you, and thank you to all of our participants.
Thank you all.
Thank you. And by the way, the presentation will be available on the website if anybody wants to access it, and there will soon be an audio replay. Thank you again to everybody, and goodbye.